Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you want your favorite 80s songs to lift your mood, play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. DAB Digital Radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio.
80s Plus.
Off you go, Matt.
They've been brilliant for 30 years and outlasted most of their indie rock peers for reasons that will become very obvious very soon. Their 12th studio album, Black Red, is out now, and here with their new single, Hey You, stand by everyone and take heed her as we follow the leader, because we all need her. Feed her!
Control room, round of applause. Here we go. Listen to that.
Come on. Feed up. Feed up. That was awesome.
Oh, thank you.
You were worried about it this morning. No need, my friend.
Well, yeah, we only got about 3 hours sleep, okay. So we're a little bit worse for wear.
Yeah, you talked to the wrong people. You know we do this for a living.
I know. You get up early.
Okay, so we've got Tom, Graham, we've got Jeff, we've got Tech, and we've got Feeder in the house. Awesome. Awesome. So, 30 years of Feeder. Yeah. Was that the plan, Grant?
It seems a long time, doesn't it? 30. We thought we'd last a while, but maybe 30 years is a bit longer than we expected.
It's cool, though, isn't it? Taka, do you remember the first meeting of Feeder? Where it happened? What did it smell like? What was the weather going
smell
on?
Smell of Camden.
Yeah, it was Camden, wasn't it?
Come on, tell us about that.
Well, did you want to go?
Oh, you go.
Well, we met, we went, where was it? Just by Camden Tube Station. Because I was living on Camden Road. And Taka put an ad in Loot. Do you remember Loot? There's some ads paper, bass player available. So I called him up. I thought, it doesn't sound very English. I didn't know where he was from. What was it you said? Like Chili Peppers, like James Addiction. Yeah, I thought, James Brown, sounds interesting. So we met in Camden over a cup of tea. Yeah. Doesn't sound very rock and roll.
Yeah, I thought we were going into pub or something.
Yeah.
Let's have a cup of tea.
And it all went from there. We used to rehearse in that old... in that arch, didn't we, Danny King's Cross?
Yeah. So it was a blind date.
It was a blind date, yeah.
50 years on from that cuppa in that cafe in Camden, we're still rocking and rolling.
Yeah. I know, it is quite incredible, really.
Oh, my God. It really is. Did you get any other people applying?
Yeah. Well, I had quite a few auditions. Right. But this one's it's easy. Because
three-piece.
Yeah, three-piece, you know. Grant's got all these songs, he could play guitar, John was a great drummer. It's just fitting.
So you came over from Japan?
Yeah.
Okay, when was that?
When? 91.
91, and didn't you come over as a design student? Or
I wanted to study some graphic design and computer.
So where did you do that for a bit?
I tried, but it didn't happen.
Okay, and so tell us about you and music before you came over to the UK.
Yeah, well, I used to play music when I was in Japan, but I didn't really expect to play bass guitar again. But I was in Portobello Market. I met these guys, one of them was a DJ, another guy was a singer. So, do you play any music? Because I had long hair, and blah, blah, blah. So, I used to play bass guitar. So we went to second-hand shop in Notting Hill Gate, and I just bought...
I know the shop. Know the shop.
Yeah.
With all the amps and all the...
That's
it
shop.
Was a record and tape exchange wasn't it?
That's the one.
What, is it still there? I think it was the original record and tape exchange.
Oh, really?
What a shop. I spent hours in there. Just talking about
everything.
I spent hours in there, especially if it's raining.
Yeah.
Especially if it was raining. What would rock and roll do without... Portobello Road in Camden Town.
I remember that shot well, actually.
Yeah.
How many bands would not have happened if Camden Town and Portobello didn't have the vibe?
I know.
They still have, thank God.
Camden, you know, there was such an amazing scene, wasn't there? With the Splash Club and the Barfly and everything. You know, that's where we started off, really.
Yeah, I was watching the new Amy Winehouse movie on Tuesday, and Dublin Castle right in there.
Dublin Castle.
Warwick Castle was in there as well.
Right, okay.
The Good Mixers in there as well. Yeah. Oh, my God. What?
The Falcon.
Oh, what days.
The Monarch.
Oh, God, they were the best ever. Yeah. Did you live in Camden?
Yeah.
Where about? Oh, Camden Road.
Well, I was in Camden Square to start with, this little tiny room, and then I...
This is where Amy ended her days in Camden Square.
Yeah, she lived just a little bit further down the left-hand side. She had a big house. Yeah, I had a flat on Camden Road. I wrote loads of feeder songs in there.
And there was were you at the time, Tucker?
Oh, I was at Kensal Green.
Yeah.
And there rock and roll. And what about you two now? You two coming on, coming in hot. We got Tom, we got Jeff. Tom is on guitar and Jeff is on... the cajon?
Cajon, yeah.
The cajon. You got some sneaky shakers in your cajon.
He has it on.
In a sock, actually.
Is it your sock?
Yeah. It's not a sock.
I can just
do
like a hip-hop beat.
Chris, he is the king of the cajon. He's
how
so
cool.
good on that thing.
It how cool amazing. Is that, man?
I didn't realise my left foot could do this, but I stuck
it really can.
And there it is.
All right, so listen, Black Ready's out. You've had this lovely, successful tour of these smaller gigs, these in-stores. You've got three more left. You're almost at the end. If this was a marathon, you're in the final mile of the marathon. Do you have a sprint finish in you for these last three dates you got?
I think so, yeah. It's been such a great vibe, hasn't it, this tour? Because we basically finished, we had about 2 days off after our UK tour, which was amazing. And then I've still not unpacked my main case. It's still in my living room.
Nice.
There's quite a bit of washing to do. And it just went straight out doing this in stores, like, you know, signings. It's been a really... In fact, I think it's been the busiest kind of week we've ever done, actually,
good
in 30
you.
Years. It's been mad.
Well, today at 7:30, Signature Brew in London. A couple of tickets left, apparently. Rough Trade East London tomorrow, midday. So two more London dates, and then a two-gig day tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah.
You finish it all on the South Coast in Brighton. What a laugh. What a perfect way to finish. What a perfect place to finish.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there's nowhere else left to play. You're in the sea after that, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. You have to swim, yeah. I think we're playing at a place called Chalk. It's like a club there, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we're
super
doing a
cool,
here.
Man.
Yeah.
You described the new album as a musical pilgrimage. Just speak to that, if you don't mind, Gareth, a bit more.
It was just, well, obviously lots of songs. You know, I mean, it's like a double album, so it's like the full like prog rock experience, you know what I mean? But, you know, we've always wanted to make a double album. I've always got cold feet, but I thought, you know what, after being a band for 30 years, we need to do something different. And, you know, we've got a lot of songs, you know, I'm still writing a lot. So I thought, you know, why not? So I think what I was trying to say was, you know, there was a lot of love and a lot of work, you know, that's gone into it. And I was, you know, we've been extremely focused on it. And I think the album hopefully hasn't got any filler because, you know, often like double albums, there can be a lot of filler.
Yeah, yeah.
So... hopefully,
well, you've
people
given
agree.
Them their own album, really, haven't you? Because that's the Black Red thing.
Yeah,
you've got.
It's like two separate albums, so it's not one long listen. So it gives you a break in the middle, you know, rather than it just be one long player.
So cool, man. So cool. Well, it's great to see you.
Good to see
the peak
you.
Of your powers.
Yeah.
Festivals this summer.
Yeah, we're doing quite a few. We're doing Kendall Calling. I can't remember all the. We're doing Isle of Wight Festival. It's about 10, isn't it? We're doing
many festivals in many fields.
There's so many festivals.
There's lots
now.
Of feeder fun to be had.
Yeah.
You're not called Feeder because you've met in the CAF, are you?
No. Although there is a Feeder Cafe in Bristol, and there's actually a Feeder Road in Bristol as well, and there's a Feeder Canal.
Right, I've never asked you that question. How come you're called Feeder? I know it's a Route 1 question. But...
Well, there was a story about me having like a goldfish called Feeder, but actually it was really, I think we were trying to sort of fit in with all the Britpop bands. It was like Breeders and like Sleeper.
Yeah.
The name kind of looked good on a board.
See, because now it's like, it's the double O, isn't it? It's the Google and the Whoop and
yeah,
the Zoom
yeah.
and the Hoopla and the Zoopla. Yeah. But then it was the double E.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the sort of trends, and of course we weren't, you know, we weren't like a Britpop band, but we were playing with lots of those bands. We thought, well, at least we look, you know, we kind of sort of like fit in on the poster.
What's your most Britpop moment that you can recall?
What's the most Britpop
vintage?
Oh,
not the
God,
most, but like give us like, you know, a couple of highlights.
Oh, Tucker, can you think of any? I mean, I knew like Donna from Alaska, you know, like way before she was in that band.
Yeah.
So she was from Newport. She used to come and watch us rehearse in a cow barn in South Wales.
Wow.
And then she ended up in Elastica. That was quite surreal. But just lots of, I don't know, any times you can think of, you know, the whole Britpop era.
God.
I'd say like the Splash Club and the Barfly was like really vibey.
Barfly. Barfly.
Every band played there.
Barfly.
Yeah. That was amazing, that place. It just had everyone from like Oasis to like Placebo, Feeder, you know, all the Britpop bands.
Well, you know, the older we get, and we're never old, and people who are older than us, so they get really annoyed when we say it on the radio. Yeah. Go, you don't know what you're talking about. Shut up. So I've now shut up about that. But we don't have to get older, because everybody is. But I always said, you know, if I could go back in time, you know, one ticket for any moment in time, you know, do you go back to, I don't know, you know, the Jesus Christ, the resurrection of Christ, the fall of the Roman Empire, the pyramids. I go, no, I want to be smack bang in the middle of the 60s, circa 62, 66, Beatles, Red Album, whatever, to pick, take a pick, you know. But now... because the 60s must have been amazing, even though I was alive in the 60s, just about. And I think I can remember hearing Marmalade by the Beatles on the radio, but I think I might have made that up. I'm not sure. But but the further we get away from the 90s, I think we sort of had our go.
Yeah.
It was a bit like that, wasn't it? Because the whole thing about Camden is I lived in Oval Road in Camden. And then as I earned a few more quid, I just moved a bit more up the hill.
Right.
I never got to Hampstead, but I got to Belsize Park. And I went to all the pubs, the Engineer, all those kind of, you know, these great, great pubs. And just you talking about it there now makes me reflective and nostalgic about those days, because Monday was like a Friday, wasn't it? Wednesday was like a Sunday.
It was such a fun time, wasn't it?
The calendar, it didn't matter what date it said on the calendar, what day. We just had all, sorry everyone, we had all the fun.
Do you know, Chris, that is so true. And there was no social media, there was no, I mean, you didn't even have like, you know, like phones really.
It was amazing. Yeah, half the time. MTV was right in the middle of Camden. Before that, TVM was there. But you know, you didn't know who you were going to see at Camden Market. On us, I had a stall in Camden Market. It was great.
Right.
You know, it was fantastic.
Well, I remember doing, we did like Insomnia. That was our first like top 20. And we did it, you know, with you on the on TFI. I remember that like really well.
Yeah, that wasn't a quiet time, was it?
That was a great, definitely.
We've got a meeting with TFI, with Netflix about TFI on Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's a great show.
We'll let you know. Okay. Great. We'll let you know.
There's no more left like that. It's, you know, it's a real shame. Well, you know, it needs to be more.
Bring him back.
Never
bring
say
it back.
Never.
Bring it
never
back.
Say
bring it
never. Back. Never
well,
say
if you
never.
Do, we'll come on.
All right, listen, everybody, listen up. Tickets and more info for everything to do with Feeder, feederweb.com. Feederweb.com. There's in-store signings, London tonight, tomorrow, Brighton tomorrow. Probably sold out by now, but anyway, have a look. Feederweb.com. Brand new album is out now, available from where you stream, wherever you get your stuff. Physical copies available from feederweb.com as well. Black, red. What are you going to play for us next, gentlemen?
We're going to do a Feeder classic. This is Just the Way I'm Feeling from Comfort and Sand. Might sound a little bit ropey, but we'll give it a go.
I don't think it will.
Oh, well. You can do the high bits for me, Chris.
Okay.
All right.
Don't tempt me.
All right. Should we do it?
It's just the way I'm feeling. All right, Feeder! You nailed it.
Thank you, mate.
It's amazing what adrenaline can do, isn't it? Okay, let's hear it for Grant Nicholas.
Thank you.
For Taki Hirose. And Jeff Holroyd. And Tom Gleason. One more time, Feeder.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on, let
it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Our next guest is able by name and very able indeed by nature. He's a journalist, editor, Times Radio Supremo, and now best-selling author. His second novel, Death in a Lonely Place, is out tomorrow. So please welcome a man who always dines at the big table. It's Stig Abel.
Good morning, Stig.
Good morning. Why? I just come here for the intros. I'm happy to go now. I'm only here for
the
intro.
Great. Okay, bye.
Yeah, take care.
All right, it's the Stigmeister. You are a supremo here of news broadcasting as well. You're one of the bosses. Did you give yourself the job on Times Radio Breakfast?
Yes, but kind of reluctantly, And we were setting up Times Radio. It's now 4 years, Chris, actually.
When 4 years. It's control round of applause for 4 years for Times Radio. Here we go. This is important. Okay, yay.
Thank you.
And they said it wouldn't last. Well, they were wrong.
Yeah. There's someone who used to work at Times Radio actually in the control room as we speak, so there's a connection there. So I was setting it up and we were trying to work out who's going to do what, and you have this whiteboard where you basically have the whole lineup and you start putting people in, and some people say yes, some people say no. And I said to them, look, I'll do it, but if we find someone better, I won't do it. Yeah. And so we didn't find anyone better at the time, and therefore I slipped in.
And you're loving it, aren't you?
Love it. I love it. And I see you do it. And, you know, your show, as we were doing it, on my little whiteboard, I remember saying, you know, the feel of the Chris Evans show is something we want to try.
We don't
and
want
get
any of the content.
To. Content is shaky.
None of that nonsense.
Very shaky.
That Vassos blokes.
The Vassos intros.
But
I think that doesn't work. But no, warmth is a big thing, isn't it? We always talk about that, Chris. Warmth in radio is absolutely everything.
It's
and
be.
So you inspired us as well.
Well, congratulations and well done going into your fifth year. But you have the same thing with us pre-7. It's a different show pre-7 o'clock, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it. And I always say that it's the kind of it's ruder,
we cheekier.
It's cheekier. Yeah. We for some reason, because people still listen and you're still on the air. We do a handover with the early breakfast team at 5:55, and I came so close. You know, all my broadcasting is I've never sworn on air, and I was so relaxed, and I was just chatting to these two women who were broadcasting. I just very nearly I got the. Out, and then I just stopped myself. I'm not going to do it now, Chris. Don't worry. I don't think. But because I feel quite relaxed here as well. But so the danger is you ease into the day, don't you? And therefore, it does have a slightly different tone.
Yeah, I think the old, you know, it's like post 10 p.m., pre 7 a.m. It's just, when you're on the radio, it's just different. I used to do 2 till 6, you know, 2 a.m. till 6 a.m. Again, different. But the vibe before 7, it's just a different show. People say they really love. They say, why can't the rest of the show be like the first half hour? I don't know.
But it can't be.
We've tried.
And if you're listening now at whatever it is, 9:23, and you don't normally listen at 6:30 when you start, then just make an appointment because it will be different.
It's entirely different. All right, so you're back with your second book. You know I loved your first. You came on to talk about it. Death in a Lonely Place, it's out tomorrow. The principal characters remain the same.
They do. And it's so Jake Jackson. And the reason I wrote this book, I wrote the first one back in COVID, really. And it's a guy, Jake Jackson, who leaves the city and he tries to find this life where there is no technology. He moves to the countryside, no internet, no connectivity whatsoever. And how much can he renounce the world?
Yeah.
How much can he find peace?
How much does he want to?
And in the second book, an old case of his comes back to life. But the questions still remain. And I was trying to think why I ended up writing these books. And a lot of it is if you scrape away all the stuff you have to do in life.
Yes.
All the bleeps and blurts of your phone, all the work obligations, all the things that have just sort of added on, all the accretions to your life that have somehow sort of barnacled onto yourself. What happens if you cut them all away? What would you say is important? What would you cling to? What can you walk away from? And so although this is a crime novel and there's a mystery and there's a conspiracy and there's murder and all the things you want in a crime novel, actually at the heart of it is a question that we've spoken before about, Chris, various times. I think it is like the question of the age, which is how much of the modern world do you need and how much do you have and how do you strike a balance between those
and
things?
How much are you addicted to, are aware of the fact you're addicted to, how much you're in denial of the fact you're addicted to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And it's an I always think this, that, you know, no one started this experiment knowingly. So technology, you never sort of know what's coming. Technology just builds and builds and builds. I remember someone saying to me about 6 months ago, today is the slowest day of the rest of your life. because life only moves in one direction. It gets quicker and quicker and quicker. And that's terrifying. Because actually, in 10 years' time, we'll look back at this as a golden age where we didn't do that much screen stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're still inside, it doesn't ever change speed. It's up to you if you're the witness of it.
But that's really hard to do. I mean, that's increasingly hard to do. And I think one of the things I wanted to do with Jake was to put him in a place, Little Sky, this beautiful rural idyll, where dark things happen, where murderous things happen, but still a place where he can try and analyse precisely what his life's all about.
Terrible things happen,
absolutely
it
awful
is,
things.
It is an inherited idyll of sorts.
It is. I mean, there's definitely a fantasy aspect to this
and
as well.
And what is great, though, all the messages you've been talking about, they do creep through into the book like this here. Family was the opposite of freedom for Jake, but it was also the opposite of loneliness, the inevitable trade-off. That's great, that line.
Because he's got to decide, you know, he's fallen in love with a woman called Livy, who's got her own daughter. And the question is, if he wants to renounce the world and find peace, that's one thing. But you can't do that if you are entangled emotionally and romantically. And I'm an old sentimentalist, Chris. I like a bit of a love story.
I know you do.
And there is this is a crime story, but there's a...
You like a bit of hot sauce as well.
There is a bit.
There's a lot of hot sauce in this.
Is there? There's a bit of nudity.
Yeah, well, it's hot sauce.
Yeah, there's some naked.
You say nudity.
There's some naked
hot
swimming.
Sauce.
That was just for Vassos.
No, but I know what you mean, because you know, if you listen to a lot of people like I do talking about various things and their challenges with life, you know, everybody's biggest challenge is their biggest challenge. You know, their own biggest challenge. But you do hear some people, and you know, they're single still, and they've got not that many commitments, and they still are struggling with, you know, their purpose in life and whether they should do this or not, and they've had a very busy summer. An ice cream, you don't know what busy is. I got 5 children, 2 grandchildren, but it's their busy, so it's all relative, isn't it?
It is. And also, I'm really interested in this question of obligation, because what is an obligation really in life? There's the things you feel you have to do.
Yes.
There's the things that you've been doing for year after year after year, which have become sort of set in concrete. Uh-huh. But maybe you don't need to keep doing them, and trying to work out what you want to do, what you think you have to do, and what you actually have to do, I think is one of the great challenges of existence. And trying to simplify it down is probably the right answer, but it's much easier said than done.
Yeah, and busyness is a great firewall to true lack of delusion.
Well, because you're frightened. I'm constantly frightened of failure. I'm constantly frightened of the thing going wrong. And that's not necessarily the healthiest place to be. I'm sure lots of people listening have this thing that where you wake up in the morning and you think, this could go wrong.
Also, failure is where satisfaction lives.
I think you can say that, Chris, and I'm sure it's right philosophically, but it's very, very, very hard for that to be felt emotionally, I think.
No, I know, but it doesn't mean, look, fences can be as high as you like, but once you get to the top, you can see what's on the other side. So it's hard whilst it's hard. But that's a great excuse for it to continue being hard.
Yeah, I get that. And I think in the end, why I've continued to write these books, so I've written the third and the fourth ones. I'm one of these people...
Oh, he's got his homework in.
I am, you know what?
Pre-summer.
I'm totally one of those people. I was reading a biography of Theodore Roosevelt, and he once...
Yeah, in between hosting the Times Radio Breakfast Show, writing a book, keeping fit, being a dad, running to work, not running to work.
I do a bit of that. But anyway, I really admire him. He's a really interesting figure. But one of the things he did was he once had a thing to write, and he was going around the world for a year. And then the deadline for the thing he had to write was 2 months after he got back from around the world.
Right.
And he wrote it before he went around the world.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's exactly what I would do. I'm one of these people that would just get... It's on my mind. I'll need to get it done. So I'm one of those people.
All right. So Jake is going to be in 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And Liv, hopefully.
And Livia.
And Diana.
And Diana, the daughter.
And Rose.
And Rose.
And Sarah.
Sarah. Yeah. Alethea and Martha, the two newish... Martha, particularly new character in this
one. I like both those.
Who I love. There's the gang. I'm trying to keep the gang together.
All right. Okay. Well, the gang's getting more like a supergroup now. It's more like the Eagles than the Beatles, isn't it? But it's great, great, great. You clearly can do this kind of stuff. So Jake, for people who don't know, Jake is a cold case specialist.
Yes. So when he was a cop in the city.
Yes. Before he inherited this massive country pile.
Exactly. And he tried to renounce the world. His job was to look after cases that had gone cold. And the second book, Death in a Lonely Place, is about this shadowy group of people called No Taboo, who are this a conspiracy that service the rich and the elite for whatever they want, whatever illegal stuff they want. And
as bad as it gets.
As bad as it gets.
Yeah.
creepy. I'm not a massive conspiracy theorist, but I do think the world operates at a certain level where people get away with things. Yes. I think that's probably not a controversial thing to say. So some of the cases in his past connect to this group No Taboo, and some of the cases in the present where he lives. And the question for him, again, this question of obligation, how much should he say, I want to stay involved? How much does he have a responsibility to try and find out what's going on? And how much can he turn his back on it all and say, do you know what? I want to live my life. I want to only deal with myself. I don't care about what happens more broadly.
There's some brilliant twists in the book. And, you know, I think, you know, coming up with an idea for a story is one thing. Coming up with a twist is another thing. But I suppose it's something, it's like the more weight you put on the bar in the gym, the more, it doesn't come to you naturally, but it does become more obvious. You go twist crazy. And towards the end, I'm like, whoa. And then right at the end, I mean, I don't know. We can't even begin to speak to what happens at the end, can we? No. We're not allowed to.
No.
We're not allowed to. Because it was good anyway. I'm thinking, oh, this is good. What an ending. And then something else happens. You go, oh, hello.
And the thing is, the reason I do this actually is for the joy of it. I've always said this. And I was talking to my mum the other day, and she was like, well, she's read the third and the fourth one. She said, are you going to write the fifth one? I was like, well, I don't have a deal yet to write the fifth one. Do you want to just write it for me?
So my mum
and my dad are a bit ill at the minute. So I'm going to probably, whatever happens with these stories, I'm going to carry on writing. Because you're so right. Like everything in life, it's about routine and doing these things. And I have such joy in writing these things, Chris. It's such an absolute pleasure to me to write it.
I don't like Sam Martinson.
No.
Don't like it.
He's a dodgy newspaper mogul.
He's very dodgy. He's all the dodge.
He is all the dodge. And I remember, he's not entirely based on, because I've worked around the media industry, not as long as you, Chris, but for quite a long time.
There's
bits and bobs of people I've met in
the industry. Is it your birthday today?
It is my birthday.
It's Sting's birthday today.
I'm 44.
He's 44. He's all the fours, 44.
Oh, no.
No, seriously, it gets better and better and better.
How old are you, Chris?
58.
You look good on 58.
I feel great, man.
49.
See, seriously, this is like Benjamin Button in here, isn't it? It's like the picture of Dorian Gray. You both look amazing on it. I feel my youngest is 5, and she got up at 6 o'clock this morning with me, and I definitely looked in the mirror, and I thought, yeah, you look every day of 44.
You absolutely don't.
Oh, bless your heart.
You look as fit as a fiddle. Jake is clearly based on you, and you keep dropping into your books, I think, your regimes, and you say you give them to Jake. Jake has spitted the venison and is waiting to roast it slowly over his fire pit, letting it sit outside on the windowsill, cold as any freezer. The flames are too high for the moment, and he's building the heat carefully. When the wood is reduced to embers, white hot and pulsing in the slight breeze, then he will let it cook for hours. You just want us to know you can rock the barbecue there.
I love in books little details of food.
Can you do all that?
No, I'm not.
Where'd you get that from then?
A bit of YouTube, probably. I wish I was as practical as him. You know, if you drop me in the middle of the countryside, I would crawl up in a ball and cry. I have the least sense of direction of anyone ever born.
Right.
To me, the greatest invention of the last 50 years is the sat nav, which has just made my life just manageable at all. So no, Jake is probably an extension of me a little bit.
He likes
to exercise, which I do.
Yeah,
well,
we'll get onto that in a moment or two. All right, but then you talk about fishing. Here we go. Similarly to the spitting of the roast there. Going fishing. I read that this might liven the fish up a bit. Get the scent going. Get them excited. They're using bits of sweet corn and dried berries as bait, and Rose sprinkles the box liberally with yellow powder. Faint smell, a hint of captured summer floats in the air. Do you really think this is going to work? Do I really think we'll catch a giant perch today? No, I don't, but I've always been a trier. That sounds like somebody who is more than a fay with float fishing in course season.
I have done a little bit. But not very successful. The great thing about writing, Chris, is you don't have to... what happens in real life and what happens on the page, there needs to be a connection, but it doesn't need to be documentary facts.
So I whenever I read your books and read about Jake and all his exploits, and Livia, I've met your wife, haven't I?
Yeah.
I just think. Well, clearly, this is what you two get up
to. When you're a novelist, you don't entirely want to admit that, because you do want to say.
So true.
Do you know what? There is a bit of invention in all of this. I've not sat down. There's a little bit of this, and as you know, I write for my wife as well, so she's a little bit in it, but. No, it's also made up, Chris. I don't want to downplay that side of things.
I know you can do that. You can rock it. You can sort of do it in your sleep. The story is brilliant. But I'm just loving the fact that I am vicariously best friends with you and your wife via Jake and Livia. Oh, seriously.
And I'm living vicariously through them as well. That's definitely true. But that's not what you do in all books. That's what you do in all fiction. You've got to have, I always say, you've got to have someone to root for. You've got to feel like there's no point in hating a character.
No, Jake's very...
You've got to feel like you're part of the gang.
Jake has his strengths. He has his issues. He has his vulnerability. He has his genius. He's got it all going on. He's also got his morning routine. I'm not talking to anyone because he's in denial, right? Brassos, this has got to be...
No!
This has got to be our friend Stig's routine. He missed his morning routine whilst at Livia's. Stig's wife's. It's now early afternoon, overcast and without wind. A world steady and saturated in grey. He puts on some old shorts and a T-shirt and then carefully wraps his hands in bandages. He shivers as he stands beneath the beech tree, then starts to move gently on the boards of his feet, circling his shoulders, throwing gentle looping rights and lefts, slowly warming his body. He sets a timer for 4 minutes and begins throwing shots against the bag, jabs, hooks, each punch thudding into the stillness. He does 8 4-minute rounds with a minute sit-ups in between each. Don't tell me that isn't exactly your workout.
Is that what you do? That's between exactly the 40-minute train home and the 1 hour of writing you do off?
I have tested that you can do it, yes. Yes. So there is a bit of... I also quite like in detective fiction, I like the training regime. You know, the sort of the Rocky montage? Mm. I like a bit of a Rocky montage also in books as well.
Right. Don't tell me this isn't you. You're ready for this.
Chris, I can't believe this is like the Wizard of Oz, isn't it? You've just pulled back the curtain. No. I'm a bearded old man sadly pulling
you're
at
not
the levers.
Old. You can't say you're old. You're 44. You look great.
Okay. Middle-aged man.
Okay, it's no fun, though. Switching off the shower and tiptoeing into the house on a day like this. Yeah. An old towel wrapped around his hard middle. The frigid air clinging to the rest of him. What there is of the rest of him. There's quite a lot to cling to. He is tall. Too tall, he often feels. Almost 6.5 feet. And in the last 2 years, his body's become broad and lean with sinewy hillocks of muscle. How tall are you?
I'm 6'5".
Yes,
there you go.
You can't hold height against me. You cannot hold height against me.
I'm not being heightist. Yeah. I'm being height right.
Yes, you're being height right. You're being fictionist. Basically, what you're saying is, instead of me creating this brand new world out of my brain, I've just looked downwards and written what I've seen.
No.
There's
not,
a bit of that.
I'm not
There's
saying
a bit
that.
Of
I'm just saying I can't stop seeing you through the pages of this book.
No. And also, the reason I love doing it is part of it is also about fantasy and the part about putting yourself there. But honestly, the joy I've had writing these things, and like I said, I've written Roosevelt style ahead of the time. I mean, you know, if you talk to other novelists, they deliver late. Vassos is talking about his book and he's not going to get that done on time.
It's not in the canteen in the morning. I mean, it's really busy.
People always deliver late, and I am
He's
the
trying
exact
to channel
opposite.
His inner J.K. Rowling, because she wrote all the Harry Potter's in the cafe.
She did. And the great thing when you start writing these things before people start reading them is there's no pressure, because you write the first one, and with this one I wrote this the second one, Death in a Lonely Place, and I handed it in, and they gave me a call and said, can you come in for a meeting, which you don't want to hear if you've run about, and they said, we really love the first half, we really love the second half, but we think they're different books. And I was like, oh no. And I thought, yeah, they're right.
That's interesting.
And I thought, God, they're right. So what actually I did, and the great thing to do in life, as you all know this, is there are experts. You should always listen to experts. There's no point in having a dog and bark yourself. You've got to trust people. And these are editors. They know what they're talking about. So they said, we love the second half book. It became a sort of country mystery, a very claustrophobic thing. And they said, we think these books should be more about breadth and ideas. And if you make it too narrow, it'll be uncomfortable. And so I basically... There's 85,000 words in a novel, and the last 40,000 I just deleted.
Whoa.
I did. You'll love this, Vassos, right?
Deleted?
I did Control-Alt, and I went, yeah, they're right.
Shut up.
And I went, boom.
You didn't need to delete it. You just, like, cut and paste it and put it somewhere else.
I'd have made that the second half of the third book.
Yeah. Well, hang on a minute. That's what happened. Back to our friend J.K. Rowling. Yeah. That's what happened with the last book, wasn't it? Book seven, yeah. But it was to do with the movie. So book seven was so brilliant and so magnificent in every way and a bit longer. The movie people said, no, there's two films here. Which is why there are six books and seven movies, or seven books and eight movies. I can't remember. I thought you were going to say that became the third book.
I got rid
You've
of
deleted
it.
You deleted it.
I kept one scene, which is my favorite.
Oh God! I know. Did that on purpose.
40,000
thousand
yeah,
words.
I did. I kept one scene, which is my favourite scene in the book, where Jake gets trapped in a priest hole.
Right, I was gonna talk. Oh, yeah. My next question was gonna be about the priest hole,
which is my favourite thing. He's in an old house and he gets pushed into this thing, and it's basically my greatest
and he's
fear
die.
In life.
He's gonna
and you,
die.
You think, and in it, the sad thing is, I put this in the book, that it's happened. People have been prisoned alive. It's not a thing that has never happened in the history of civilization. It has happened, and so to me, it's my greatest ever fear. And so I had like 6 or 7 pages of me basically writing mid panic attack, thinking about it.
Big question here, right? So when the publishers come back to you, the people who really know what they're doing, you know, but they're not, you know, no flower is anything without the seed, and you're more than the seed. But they come back and they think, and they know what they're going to face, because I've had this. They're going to go, oh, I'm going to have to tell them, you know, it's a bit too long, or I need to write some more words. Yeah. And then you say, don't worry, I've deleted 40,000 words. They're like, nobody does that.
Well, I just think you've got to listen to that. And also, I love
writing.
What
was their response to that?
I think they were quite pleased that I would. Because also, you know what people are like? They over flatter you a little bit, and they sort of say, oh, we really like it. And they're worried that you're going to huff and puff.
Yes,
they're worried
that
you're going to get a strop on.
And
I was a bit sort of mouth open for a day or two. And then I just thought, no, they're right. And also, I got to write 40,000 words more. And it's a genuine pleasure doing it.
Oh, right. So you replaced the 40,000 words with a continuing kind of feeling of the first.
Yeah, exactly. And saying they were right. And so the story goes off in a different direction.
I see. So it was more kettled the first time around.
Exactly. And it became a different book. And they said, that's not a bad book. They quite liked it, but it's not the thing you should be writing.
It's funny because it does get very explosive. It does. If it were a purview, if it were a panorama, it becomes wider, not narrower.
And that's what they. And I'm interested in that anyway, because I think that's why I've written these things. It's about sort of trying to expand the world out. And
it's a sign as well. There's a bit of screenplay in the second half.
Well,
it would lend itself to a screenplay.
The option has been bought, but you know these things better than me. There's an actor who wants to do it, but I'm not allowed to say who it is.
Oh, who could be Jake?
I know, who could be Jake and who could be Olivia? But someone, an actor has actually bought it, so it's someone who wants to be Jake.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, someone wants to be Jake.
Does his name begin with T and end in Om?
No.
All right, interesting.
Can you
tell me after?
I'll tell you.
I promise I won't say.
And then when it comes out, everyone can say, oh yeah, I can see.
I love it when, because that's not difficult to do, to buy rights to books. People have done it successfully. You can buy rights to books. You can option right to books. I do seem to remember All Quiet on the Western Front, which was up for all the Oscars.
Yeah.
The lady who came in to talk about that.
I interviewed her as well. Yeah. Amazing.
She, who's an amazing ultra-athlete, isn't she?
Yeah, she's a Scottish woman, isn't she?
Yeah. She came in to talk about it. She optioned that. She mortgaged a house, apparently.
Oh, and these things can also never happen. You know, I was talking to Mick Herron, who writes Slow Horses. You know, that became an Apple show.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. Gary Oldman's the star of it. But he said to me, I first sold this option 8 years before it got on screen. Wow. So the road is littered with these things not actually getting made, but you know, you never
well,
know.
Honestly, never know. It's a right riveting read from the beginning to the end. It's educational because Stig is very clever and he watches a lot of YouTube. And there's also a playlist which we can listen to whilst reading the book.
Yeah, because he listens to quite a lot of classical music, actually. And I thought, as I was writing, I listened to it. So one of my routines is, the way I get into the mode of writing is I put music on and it can't have really words in it. So as I was writing it, I thought, the stuff I was listening to, I put in the book. And then at the end, I said, if you want to have the full experience, you can, here's a playlist.
And it's been scientifically proven that if you listen to classical music while trying to learn something, draw something or write something, it will make the experience better, not worse. And it is non-interruptive, because what it does is it opens up all the neural pathways that you need to get out of your own way. And it helps stimulate flow.
Well, it certainly does for me, because also it makes me, as soon as I hear it, I think I'm now in a place where I want to write. And so at the end of the book, and I'll put it on social media, I've done a Spotify playlist for it. So if people actually want to just click on it, you can listen to this whole raft of music.
It's out tomorrow. How well did the first book do?
It did pretty well. Yeah, it did well. And the Payback was only out a month ago. And the idea with these things, the timing is, what happens is, it comes out in April, the Payback will come out in January, February of next year. Then the third one will come out in April. So it's an annual. These things are built around an annual thing.
So they get a rhythm to them.
They get a rhythm to them. And normally people are trying to catch up to write it. But as we've discussed, I've written the next two anyway.
If you, I mean, I'm not. I always tell
you know, you're not a fiction reader.
I'm not
are
a big
you?
Fiction reader. I've got to read Marianne Keyes's book before tomorrow. Her new book. That's going to be
so
a bit of a
that.
Reading week for me.
Yeah.
Let me tell
been.
You.
She's
well,
lovely, Marianne Keyes as well, isn't she?
The thing with this dig, though, I just before I read yours, I had got an email from booking.com because one of my flights got cancelled and they hadn't paid me back. And they said, don't worry, we're going to escalate. And then I start reading your book and it's like it's in a lonely place under, you know, a little sky. And I thought, this is nice. And then very quickly, it
terrible, awful. The worst thing, the unthinkable things happen in the book, or at least alluded to in the book.
And I think, oh, well, I hope booking.com escalate like you can.
Wow. Nice.
I tell you what, put that on the back of a book. Escalate it as bad as booking.com.
Just don't say Vassar Alexander underneath it. Put Melvin Bragg.
Melvin Bragg, this escalated like booking.com. He's always drawing analogies with booking.com, right. Melvin Bragg, isn't he?
We got to go. You're awesome. Stig Abels. New book.
I love your show, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Love you, man. Love the bones of you. Death in a Lonely Place out tomorrow. This is Stig Abel and Asma Me on Times Radio, Monday through Thursday, 6 till 10.
Love the 80s? Then you'll love Virgin Radio 80s Plus.
Love Chris Evans. Love the 80s.
Over on Virgin Radio
80s Plus.